Good morning, Colorado. You're listening to the Daily Sun Up with the Colorado Sun. It's Thursday, December 1st. Today, we're talking to Colorado Sun equity reporter Tatiana Flowers about the experiences of Iranian students in Colorado while protests are underway in their home country. She also fills us in on an event she's hosting this evening on equity in home ownership. Before we begin, we'd like to thank our friends and sponsors at Xcel Energy. Xcel Energy can help you find ways to keep your home or business running smoothly while reducing energy use and saving you money. Find everyday tips for using less energy and simple ways to manage your energy budget at xcelenergy.com. Now, let's go back in time with some Colorado history. Francis Lowry was born on this date in 1894 and joined the U.S. Army during World War I to train in the brand new field of aerial reconnaissance. He arrived in France in February of 1918 and served as a photographer and observer of artillery positions from aircraft. On September 26th, during Lowry's 33rd mission, German guns shot down his plane and he died in the crash. Buried in France initially, his remains were returned to Colorado for interment 3 years after his death. Memorials to Lowry begin with a Colorado National Guard airfield at 38th Avenue and Dahlia Street in 1924. It also served as Denver's municipal terminal before the future Stapleton International Airport debuted in 1929. In the 1930s, the U.S. Army planned a new aerial reconnaissance facility at Agnes Memorial Sanitarium, a tuberculosis hospital east of Denver. The Works Progress Administration transformed the 880-acre facility into a military base starting in 1937, and the site took Lowry's name. Lowry Field flourished during World War II, instructing tens of thousands of trainees each year. The facility shifted to the U.S. Air Force in the late 1940s and housed the Air Force Academy from 1955 until it moved to El Paso County in 1958. Lowry also served as President Eisenhower's base of operations during his Colorado vacations in the 1950s and as a nuclear missile base in the early 1960s. By then, encroaching neighborhoods made flight training impractical. Downgraded in 1994, Lowry Air Force Base remains an administrative center. Before we continue, a quick message. The Colorado Sun invites you to attend Closing the Gap, a conversation with Colorado's Black community about home ownership. Join the virtual discussion to hear from expert panels about getting the Black community to a place where they have better access to home ownership. The event is free, will be streamed and recorded on December 1st from 5:30 to 6:45 p.m. Learn more at coloradosun.com/events. Next, our feature story.
Welcome back to the Daily Sun Up podcast, Colorado. I'm Carol Wood, guiding you through today's conversation, and I'm grateful to be here with you today. And I'm also grateful to be here with Tatiana Flowers, the Colorado Sun's equity reporter. Hi, Tatiana.
Hi, Carol.
Thanks for coming by. I know that we don't talk as often as I hope that we can, and so I really appreciate you taking time for us today. One of the things that's super exciting for me is we have an event that we're going to do here this evening, Thursday, December 1st, virtual event with the Colorado Sun on the homeownership gap that exists between Black and white Coloradans. And apparently, it sounds like that gap is widening, not narrowing like it has between white and Latino Coloradans. And so virtual event that you are going to moderate, well, I think you've got a co-moderator too. You can fill us in about that in a little bit, but you're going to have Aisha Weeks, the managing director of the Deerfield Fund for Black Wealth, Jice Johnson, the founder and chief visionary officer for the Black Business Initiative, and Theo E.J. Wilson, a columnist for the Colorado Sun, and Brandon Stepter, who specializes in using history as a guide for better diversity and inclusion. So those are your panelists. You're going to have an hour and 15 minute discussion. Folks can head over to coloradosun.com/events, sign up for free and watch the discussion. They can send us questions. And if you sign up for it, you also get a link to it that you can watch later on. So I know that you can fill us in a little bit more on the event if you want to before we get into our conversation about what you've been reporting.
Sure. I'm very excited. This panel discussion is kind of moving forward a story that I did. Oh, man, I don't even know when that was. But earlier this year, And that story came from a partnership that we and a lot of other Colorado news outlets had with Colorado News Collaborative, which is also called CoLab. It's a nonprofit that helps news outlets produce fact-based news stories that make a difference. And their goal is to help bridge the community with news outlets and create trust. And so they decided to have a project called Chasing Progress. And we did several stories, not just The Sun, but a lot of news outlets across the state that examine the social, economic, and health equity of Black and Latino Coloradans. And since I write a lot about housing, unsurprisingly, in my equity beat, I wrote about this homeownership gap based on data that CoLab pulled for me. And basically, the headline of the story was, after 50 years, the homeownership gap between white and Latino Coloradans has narrowed, but for Black and white Coloradans, the gap has widened. And so the story takes a look at like what is leading to that, how that is affecting Black Coloradans and actually Coloradans as a whole, and what are some solutions that could be put in place to alleviate this. And so the panel discussion is set up similarly, except it has different voices on the panel who are all Black people living in Colorado. One is a new Black homeowner. One is a director of the Deerfield Fund, which has a program that helps Black people who want to become first-time homeowners. And the other two are leading their own businesses that help Black people in different ways. And so I think just in short, like wealth disparities, bias in appraising and lending, and exclusionary housing policies that were put in place, like all of those things have made it difficult for Black families to purchase a home anywhere and build generational wealth, but we'll be focusing specifically on Colorado. So I hope that people will be able to attend, and that even though it's not the happiest conversation to have, that this will be focused on solutions which will help people get through it.
Absolutely. And that's a lot of what the focus of your reporting and reporting at the Colorado Sun is about launching dialogue and looking for solutions. And to your point, this panel discussion also is in partnership with the Colorado News Collaborative. They're helping us sponsor it. So the other thing I was hoping that we'd have some time to talk about is a story that you've been reporting on about some Iranian students in the U.S. and specifically in Colorado. You know, what they're experiencing around being here in the U.S. while there's tremendous unrest going on in their home country. Kind of started this fall when a 22-year-old woman was killed in Iran after officials accused her of not wearing her hijab correctly. And so in the ensuing months, there's been a tremendous amount of protests and unrest in Iran. And tell us a little bit about the college students here in the U.S. and specifically in Colorado who shared their experience and their story with you around what's happening at home for them.
Yeah, I wrote a story about Ukrainians living here in Colorado and how they were trying to make sense of the war that Putin started there in late February. And that story caught the eye of a CSU professor who reached out to me a few weeks ago to ask if I could highlight how Iranian students at the school are feeling during the unrest that's going on there now. And I ended up talking to these students, and they were telling me that they feel unsupported by CSU, which is where all three of them attend school. And they feel unsupported by local and national news outlets who they say are writing things that are not accurate. And they feel unsupported by national and local leaders who they say could be doing more to publicly condemn Iranian leaders who have a long-standing track record of human rights abuses, especially on women, of repression when people protest or disagree with the Islamic regime. And so just for background, these most recent protests started after Iranian officials accused a 22-year-old woman named Mahsa Amini of not wearing her hijab in accordance with government standards. The Iranian government mandated in the late 1970s a rule that requires women there to wear a hijab in public. And over the years, Iranian women, especially the younger ones, have been becoming more liberal and pushing back against this rule. And so there's been lots of protests about this before because Iranian women feel restricted and degraded by this. Iranian officials said that Mahsa Amini died after she was arrested and that she had a heart attack at a police station. But eyewitnesses, who were mostly women arrested with her, said they saw her being beaten by Iranian police. So this incident has led to the unprecedented mass protests that actually seem to be swelling instead of reducing in size, where people are being beaten by Iranian officials trying to quell them. Some have been sentenced to death for protesting, and others have been, you know, just trying to avoid scenes where protests are happening because they know they could be arrested for just simply being in the vicinity.
Right. Yes, it's been horrifying to watch. And I guess also really empowering. Both of those things can be true. What would these students like to see from local and national leaders in response to the protests? You know, you mentioned that they're feeling that it's not enough. Do they have ideas about what they would like to see?
Yeah, you make a good point about how scary it is, but also how empowering it is. These students were saying that they don't feel supported at all, and that they viewed the U.S. as a place that values human rights, especially women's rights, before they moved here, and that the lack of discourse from local and national officials and leaders of their school is making them feel differently, like that they're not valued and that they're an afterthought, or that they've been forgotten while they're living here.
So what would they like to see from the national and local leaders?
They want to see from the local level, Colorado leaders regularly condemning Iranian leaders for their abuses against citizens. It's also brutality. They also want to see national leaders place sanctions on Iranian leaders and their families, which would bar them from entering other countries, for example. And they also said they want to see Iran removed from many of the governmental bodies it's a part of, such as one called the International Telecommunication Union. And that is basically exactly what it sounds like. Iran has a track record of shutting down or reducing access to the internet whenever it has any uprising or unrest, which is put in place so that people can't communicate about what's going on inside there. And these students said they feel like Iran should be removed from that body, for example, because shutting down the internet is doing the complete opposite of what that group's mission is. And then also the students, I can't like wrap everything up this quickly, and people should read the story, but they were also upset that it took CSU 3 weeks to send out a really short email addressing Iranian students in their plight. And they said they had to take matters into their own hands by setting up a table at the student center to educate all CSU students about what Iranian students are going through and what led to the protests in their home country and how that can affect people even in the United States.
Wow, that must have been very frustrating for them. And, you know, to echo your point, I would really invite our listeners to go over to coloradosun.com and read the story. I believe launching today, December 1st, and it's a great read and something that they can refer to. You know, it's interesting because these feelings of discord also even spilled over to the FIFA World Cup. And on Tuesday, the 29th, you know, when the U.S. team beat the Iranian team in the World Cup, even that felt political. And I know in hearing reporting about that, that political feeling extended into the stands and the fans of both teams. And so this is a real global issue right now. And is it feasible for any of these students? Are they trying to get back to their home country? Is that something that's feasible for them, or are they just really safer here?
For the feasible question first, writing this story was really difficult because a lot of what I was told by political analysts that I talked to help me answer that question, the answers that they gave, I don't think the Iranian students are going to think those answers are going to be enough. But what they did say is that generally, the U.S. is not going to get involved in another country's tense political affairs like this, unless if it looks like the other country's government is going to be overthrown soon anyway. The U.S. has helped overthrow the Iranian government before and other governments like in Cuba and Mexico, for example, and those countries hate us now, which is not really safe for anyone. And if the U.S. ended up meddling in this situation in Iran, and mind you, the Iranian government already thinks that a lot of these protests are organized somehow by the U.S., their government is likely going to become even more hostile toward us and vice versa, maybe. And it would likely mean that protesters are going to get punished even worse than they are already now. And so what these analysts said to me, actually, they were really explicit and they actually advised that we don't get involved. And said that doesn't necessarily help Iranian students, though, who are watching their country unravel from afar. And many of them still have family members living there. So I do dive into that a lot in the story, but I think the overwhelming consensus was that the solution should be more social and less, like, I guess, political, for example, even though I personally think everything is political. But realistically, like, on a small scale, Polis could invite Iranians in Colorado to an event at the governor's mansion to show solidarity. The U.S. could accept more Iranian refugees, especially women who need to get out and flee for persecution on their gender. The U.S. has many programs that were cut under the Trump administration that would have allowed young people from other countries to come here and study. And they usually leave and go back to their country with a higher education level and a different mindset, and are usually, you know, more allied with the U.S. when they return, which could help them fight for a democracy in their own countries, which can create world peace. Another thing was that the U.S. can implement more political strategies that center women in its policy agendas, since women represent half the population and are often left out of those conversations or are discriminated against.
Right. Well, it's a really interesting topic, and thank you for shining light on it for us and for our listeners and for our readers. Look forward to reading the full story. I just want to remind our listeners, if they want to tune in to your event this evening, to go over to coloradosun.com/events and sign up for what you're moderating this evening from 5:30 to 6:45 on the homeownership gap and all the things that surround that between Black and white Coloradans. And Tatiana, thank you very much for coming by today. Thanks too to everyone who helped produce today's podcast and to our production partners at Pirate Audio. And if anybody has questions or thoughts about the Daily Sun Up podcast, I invite you to drop us an email at podcast@coloradosun.com. And have a wonderful day out there. I sincerely hope that you can join us for the next Daily Sun Up as well.
Read more at coloradosun.com. Finally, here are a few stories that you should know about today. A ballot proposal for the 2023 election would impose a fee on every real estate transaction in Colorado to fund affordable housing. The Community Attainable Housing Fee ballot proposal submitted last month to the Colorado Legislative Council would impose a 0.1% fee on all real estate deals in the state. The attorney who submitted the ballot initiative contends it's not a tax and would not be subject to the 1992 Taxpayers' Bill of Rights. This latest push to fund housing comes on the heels of a successful campaign to spend Colorado income tax dollars on affordable housing. Colorado's second-largest electricity provider is set to lose nearly a quarter of its revenue as member electric cooperatives leave the Tri-State Generation and Transmission Association. It could be a crippling blow for the nonprofit provider of wholesale power to 42 rural co-ops in four states, including 860,000 Colorado customers. Executives at member co-ops, industry analysts, and competing power wholesalers say the 75-year-old Tri-State is at a crossroads. Some cooperatives are looking to generate more of their own electricity or buy it on the open market. Also, there is increasing pressure on the association to move to wind, solar, and energy storage. A large group of Native American students, parents, and community members feel the Denver School Board needs to better support the American Indian Academy of Denver. School district officials say the charter school is struggling with low enrollment and funding, but the students contend the school offers them a safe place to learn without being bullied and helps them connect to their culture. At a school board meeting this week, the DPS superintendent said he was flabbergasted by the demand to save the school when he hadn't yet recommended closing it. For more information on all these stories, visit our website, www.coloradosun.com. And don't forget to tune in again tomorrow. The Colorado Sun is nonpartisan and completely independent. We're always dedicated to telling the in-depth stories we need today more than ever. And the Sun is supported by readers and listeners like you. Right now, you can head to coloradosun.com and become a member, starting at $5 per month. And if you bump it up to $20 per month, you'll get access to our politics newsletter, The Unaffiliated, as well as our outdoors newsletter, The Outsider, and our new health and environment newsletter, The Temperature. All three exclusive newsletters delivered to your inbox every week.